What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me at the roundtable, I welcome students from the Rickards High School International Baccalaureate Program. Joining me at the roundtable is Julia Osagi. Julia is a senior at Rickards in the IB program. She's into politics and debate. Welcome to 411 Team.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. Ewan Nicholson. Ewan is in the 11th grade. He also is at Rickards IB. He likes rock climbing and writing and comedy.
Hello.
Miles Neumeier. Miles is in the 11th grade. History, American Civil War, swimming, those are his things. And he is also in the IB.
Hello.
Kaya Peters. Kaya is in the 12th grade. She is in the physical therapy and athletic training and Chicago Bulls.
Hello, beautiful people.
I'm glad to have all of you. A huge amount of money is being made off of college sports. The NCAA gets a cut. The universities get a cut. The coaches get a cut. But the athletes do not see any of the money. Under NCAA rules, the student players are considered amateurs. According to the rules, amateurs are not allowed to profit from their sports. A 1893 college sports book handbook states that a gentleman never competes for money, and the NCAA amateur code was adopted in 1956. Since then, the NCAA's view has been that college athletes are students, not professionals or employees, and they're not entitled to paychecks. First of all, are any of you athletes? How have you been?
Yes, I.
Yes, I have. As well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this? Respond to it.
As an athlete, I know how hard it is. I played girls basketball at Rickards for 3 years, and it's a struggle because on top of the school requires you, Leon County. I mean, it's not as big as the NCAA, but there still are requirements to be made for a certain GPA, and it is hard to struggle going to practice, between 3 to about 6, and then having to go home and then do your homework. And then somehow they expect you to be awake in class when you had to wake up at 5 in the morning. And especially with the IB program, you're staying late to about 11 writing papers. Mm-hmm. I'm thankful for the experience because I'm pretty sure that's how it's going to be in college. But it is a lot of expectations when you are a student athlete. You have to make, in my opinion, a lot more effort it does take because you're focused on multiple things and you're being pulled in different directions.
Okay, well, I want to hear from everyone because all of you seem to have had, some experience and see where you sit on that, and we'll take it from there.
I agree with Kaya that you sacrifice a lot of your time, your effort, and your energy, and you put it all into these sports. Dedication takes a lot out of you. And You have to be able to focus on school, and while they are student athletes, they're putting in as much time, maybe even more time than a professional athlete might. So it's really important to recognize them, and that time has changed. It's not 1893 anymore. These kids are I say kids, but these collegiate students are working out day in, day out, all year round, and just trying to improve. And they're essentially professionals at what they're doing.
Okay.
Personally, I know that athletics can be as hard, if not harder in some cases, than just a regular job. Mm. And so, personally, I was on the fence about this issue, but I've been leaning more towards the fact that I think athletes should get paid due to their rigorous schedules, how much time they commit to their sports. They really can't have a job and still be in school and have proper commitment to school. So I feel like they do deserve some payment.
And I think part of their agreement is that they can't work.
I don't think that they can work outside of, you know, being an athlete.
Well, I know there's an example where recently I found out that the University of Florida, the special teams player, he is also a bagger at Publix.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, but that was because he wasn't on scholarship. So, but even though he's on scholarship this year, he still puts in a few hours, you know, bagging. So it's an extreme case.
Yes, it is. Because being an athlete, he should not have to do that.
Yeah. On that note, the research that we conducted before we came here, you know, Forbes.com estimated that student athletes on average work 43.3 hours a week, which is three more hours than the average American. So clearly their sports, you know, whichever sport they're in, you know, the top two are football and basketball, that they're requiring large amounts of time and a lot of effort and a lot of energy. And it seems the college coaches at these schools are making a lot of profit as a result of these students.
And the schools.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true. And so students should get some type of compensation for the work they do because they are being exploited to the fullest degree. And, you know, we talked about this before we came, but if students were to be paid, the question was brought up whether or not they would be able to handle the money that they have coming in.
Well, I mean, and that opens a lot of issues, and I think we're going to explore all of them because it looks at who gets paid, who doesn't get paid, what athletes, you know, what sports, because all sports don't generate money. You know, it's the big, you know, the basketball and the football that bring in the money that really may pay for swimming or golf or archery, you know.
Particularly men's sports.
Yes. And that, I mean, that's just the way it is. But as we look at this whole issue about students being paid, do you see it as an issue between amateur and professional? Because that's something that, you know, the NCAA has tried to throw in, saying, well, the way we see it is that these students are amateurs. And if you are an amateur, you don't get paid for your feat. Okay. Wow. And so I'm just throwing that out there. Do you see it as an issue being amateur versus professional?
Personally, I don't see it like that. Okay. I guess the way I see it is I think I've always thought that college athletes, especially at the level you see in a lot of schools across the country, are very professional in just the true definition of the word. And the amount of work they put into the team and the way they play. These teams do some really impressive things, and it's I feel like they're very professional in their own way.
Like Miles pointed out before, that these amateur, quote-unquote amateur athletes, are practicing just as much, if not more, than these professional athletes, and they are playing at the level of professional athletes as well, and they are exploited at the same level that professional athletes are. So I think that it's diluting the issue of whether, you know, it's not professional versus amateur. Okay. And I'm not sure about the specifications, but I know that you have
what
to.
What is the difference?
Yeah, I know you have to. Don't you have be in school for a certain amount of time anyway before you become a professional player?
Well, that's another thing. For me, when you say amateur and professional, if you tell me, for instance, a Jabari Parker can play in a sold-out crowd in Cameron Stadium at Duke, which is equivalent to any stadium. If he can be watched by millions of people like LeBron James, then why can't he be, you know, compensated? And one thing I found interesting is the truth is the former point guard, Shabazz Napier for UConn, he said there are some nights that, you know, you go hungry because there's not enough food.
Exactly.
And in my opinion, I honestly think that you have, especially in men's basketball, those one-and-dones that don't continue school past 1 year because that's what the NBA regulates, 1 year in school. But I think had they had a stipend, they wouldn't feel as if they had the need to earn money, that they can actually get a full education because you have to set up for a life after your sport.
And I was going to add to what you were saying is that even those athletes who are on scholarship, many of them, the full meal plan is not included. I mean, I was blown away when I was doing preparation for the program, and I found out that their meal plans and other incidentals that they may have are not fully covered. Now, what kind of situation is that? And in addition to that, I read that even those who are on full scholarship, they incur about at least $3,200 a year in debt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but what does that say? And yet the school are making millions of dollars. They're generating millions of dollars. And these athletes, as you've already said, they work just as hard. You know, they put in just as much time. Plus, something that we haven't even addressed, is they're eligible for injury just like anybody else, too.
Yeah,
and that's a big issue. The fact that they're putting all this time and they're eligible for injury, they're making millions of dollars, but they're not being paid. The response that the NCAA, or some of the response that they have said, is that, well, you do get compensated, okay? You do get, you know, even if it's not a full meal, you do get a meal plan, you get room, and you get board, and that this indeed is, quote, unquote, payment. You know what I mean? No, they're not saying it's payment, okay, yeah. But mm-hmm. this indeed mm-hmm. is, you know, you're getting this, you don't have to pay any of that. But mm-hmm. it seems like, and I don't know, I might be wrong, I'm not a scholar, I'm not a pundit on this, but it seems like if you are on scholarship, a basketball scholarship, a full scholarship, that everything should be taken care of, number mm-hmm. one, and that they should at least give you some spending money, because most athletes on full scholarship cannot work. That's a part of their contract.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they can't, I mean, you mentioned that one exception.
Yeah.
Okay? But, you know, that's truly an exception.
Truly, yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
So what happens when they want a pizza and it's 12 o'clock at night and they're hungry?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things with athletes is how much they have to eat to stay in shape. And, like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, being a swimmer, you constant, yeah. The stereotype of a swimmer is that you constantly have to eat because mm-hmm. you do so much exercise. And, like, and if like you said, they're only getting half part meals,
mm-hmm.
You can't maintain an effective point. Like, you can't maintain good physical condition if you're not eating adequately, and if they're not getting paid enough to buy their own meals, or buy their own meals on a regular basis at least, it's totally inadequate.
Hold your thoughts, and we'll come back. You're tuned in to 411 Team. This hour, we're examining the controversial topic of pay for athletes. Right now, we're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, a weekly program for and about teens and their families and issues they confront on a daily basis. This hour we're discussing, should college athletes be paid? Two recent rulings may change the face of college sports. In August, a federal judge decided that players in top college football and men's basketball programs are entitled to receive payment if their names, their images, or their likenesses are used in video games or TV broadcasts. Now, of course, this is to be appealed. So I wanted to throw that out there. And I also would like to welcome, who just joined us, Isaac Bernstein. Isaac is also an IB student. He's a senior, and he's interested in criminal justice.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. So I think I may have had to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Did you want to finish your comment?
Well, we're talking about the meal plan, and my point is there's no way a 350-pound linebacker who's 6'4" mm-hmm. can mm-hmm. eat. I've seen what they have in meal plans on my college visits, and sure, you have that buffet, but then you have afternoon practice, and then come 11, there's nothing mm-hmm. for you to eat, and then they stress, you know, eating healthier, and all you have is ramen noodles full of sodium. It's kind of like, mm-hmm. and I know a big boy, his eyes is going to be hungry, so it has to become a point where you know, maybe find a solution, maybe mm-hmm. go to Publix and get a gift card for them. Get some groceries.
Or some crab legs.
That too. I'm still waiting for the butter. So I've been looking for it. Can't find it.
But, you know, that actually brings up an interesting point. We're, you know, we're all seniors and we're looking at universities that we're going to attend in the future. And so are, you know, the juniors. They should definitely be thinking about it at this point. Mm-hmm. And the biggest question is, where can I afford to go? And, you know, for me, I always thought, well, athletes, they don't have anything to worry about. They can get a scholarship. They'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
But when I see these athletic scholarships and their actual manifestation, it doesn't seem like it's enough. Right? You guys pointed out the flaws in it. And it's really sad that they're locking them into a system that they can't get out of until they graduate. I mean, like you said, they're not allowed to work, but they're still required to put in just as much work in their athletic career, and they're not making any profit from them being exploited, but they're exploited to their fullest potential, and those coaches are definitely sleeping
in
change, right? So, I mean, it's a system that they're locked into, and it seems very unfair.
Yeah.
I don't mean to contradict at all what you just said, but kind of as we've talked about a little bit, or has been said, with the players not being allowed to work, I'm not necessarily saying that I agree with that, but the at least as I understand, the kind of underlying thought behind that sort of ban is that they don't want a student, well, specifically an athlete, to you know, have a, say, let's have a rich alumni member who just says, hey, wash my car, and then hands them $10,000 and, you know, ends up giving them exorbitant amounts of money for proportionally little work. I'm not saying that that happens all the time, that's necessarily the issue, but I mean, the underlying issue is they don't want kind of unfair benefits to be given to athletes in terms of working.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. But then if that's the case, give them enough money so they can exist.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
You know, I think that's where we're at.
I think it's actually become the opposite problem. Mm-hmm. It's not so much of, at least in a lot of cases, it's kind of the opposite problem. It's not them needing to prevent players from receiving too much. Mm-hmm. It's becoming an issue of making sure that they get enough to
deal
with what's on their plate.
Right.
And my thing is, you know, you read the ruling, and what stuck out to me is men's football, men's basketball. You have other sports. You have women's sports who are already underrepresented, but I know there are some universities, like University of Tennessee, where there's a strong showing in women's basketball. You have those examples. But to say, you know, you forget about the other little sports, like you said, swimming and soccer and, you know,
But I was going to say, but remember that men's football and men's basketball are big money sports.
Definitely.
And what we're talking about is the money. I mean, really, that's the whole key here, is the money. And so, you know, I mean, I'm not denying that women don't have, you know, valid, you know, roles in sports. Mm-hmm. But they're talking about where they're bringing the money in. And the money is that's where it's at.
I'd also like to bring up another point. Mm-hmm. If we did pay players, clearly, you know, looking at every team, some players are better than others.
Right.
Not everyone is paid on a LeBron James level.
And what about the universities? I mean, what if you're a student at Florida State?
Not everybody's Jameis Winston.
Right.
So who is going to delegate who gets how much money and what system will be used? Yeah. So, okay. Let me hold up.
No, go ahead.
I mean, that would be my question. How would they delegate who gets what amount of money and where is the baseline? I just would like to see how that would work. I just feel the reason why they're not going in, opening up that box of paying players, athletes.
It's a never-ending cycle.
It's a never-ending cycle. You have to consider women's sports against men's sports. Mm-hmm. You have to consider who gets paid at what baseline, who gets paid for being the best.
Right.
I mean, do you pay those sports who aren't bringing in as much income, like swimming and tennis, as compared to football and basketball? There's just so many questions that I think they don't want to have to answer, so they're just keeping that box closed.
I think it's a little interesting, if I may. The whole athletic thing, I believe that, you know, there are players of varying skill levels, but I think at the college level, perhaps just paying the players enough to sort of sustain themselves would be fine regardless of skill level, because the fact is they're all putting in the same amount of work. You know, they're all putting in the same amount of practice.
If you've been accepted on a collegiate sports level, then that's already kind of a status in and of itself. If you're on a collegiate level team, then that is already kind of a status of you, or you have a skill of mm-hmm. a, over special. A certain bar.
Right. Yeah.
It's not necessarily asking to, you know, pay just everyone who just kind of shows up for practice. This is the case of asking to pay players who have proven themselves to be dedicated to the sport to the point where they're willing to take on extra responsibilities and put up with an intensive physical care, physical regimen to keep up with the sports and still maintain the level of studies.
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Because let me just throw this in there. Mm-hmm. It might influence. On the average, an athlete, basketball, football, puts in 60 hours a week. This is with practice and games, you know, including all of that. Mm-hmm.
And to them, that's almost like a job, you know.
Yeah,
and there's a sort of microeconomic principle I've been thinking of this whole time, referred to as opportunity cost. Mm-hmm. So them practicing essentially eliminates their opportunity to do other things that could, you know, other things in general, whether it's a job or whether it's just recreational activities. And that sort of has to be taken into mind, is them dedicating themselves to this sport is also sort of taking away things that they could be doing with their time. And that's just another reason I feel that compensation is necessary. And I'm not saying extravagant amounts like professional athletes, but something.
And plus there's the issue – I don't mean to cut you off, but in addition to what Ewan was saying, there's also the issue of this blanket ban about jobs. So in addition to already having so much time taken up by practice and training, they have such little time, and they're specifically not allowed to put in what little free time they might have for a job if they believe that they might be able to manage that.
Miles, you had to.
I was just going to bring up this kind of connotates to the recent minimum wage debate. Mm-hmm. That's been going on, and what would be defined as a living wage. And I feel like it kind of resolved itself around about $10 an hour. Mm-hmm. I feel like athletes should be paid what should be defined as a living wage or minimum wage. And it's necessary in their scenario. I mean, even for especially for athletes that don't happen to be on scholarship, because – While they are able to work and are able to do stuff, walk-ons, they're expected to put in the same, maybe even more work, because while they may not go on to the professional level of their sport, they are expected to be competent and improve throughout their time on that team. So if they aren't able to improve and they aren't able to that it sustain themselves, then it's a serious problem.
And then something, I know we didn't talk about the original ruling, but now there's another ruling by the National Labor and Relations Board that granted football players at Northwestern University in Evanston, they got the right to be recognized as university employees, and they got the right to form a union. Now, of course, this is being appealed too, but that, you know, there's a little bit of light, you know.
I agree with having a union, because you need that's something that I think prepares them for the next level, because you do have a union. I think usually a union is to look out for the best interests of its players. And if the team feels like they're overworked, or, you know, they don't have time to do this, or, you know, they want to have safety, you know, conditions made in hand, then a union can serve that purpose, not necessarily getting, money, but I think a union is important, especially, for instance, what I like, University of Maryland, they just passed a new ruling saying that any athlete that has received a scholarship here, and even if they left, they can come back at no cost.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I think if a union can argue that, hey, we might go off to the NBA, but we want to come back to school, we should be able to come back to school. So I think,
of course, you go off to the NBA and you make a whole lot of money.
You probably won't need it.
To come back.
So I think, but
you're
when people
taking that from someone else who could use it.
Right. But I think when people hear union, it's automatically a negative connotation. But I think a union can fight for other things, you know, especially for student. You know, maybe they need more time in the classroom. I mean, they're already missing schools for playing in these big games. So a union can help make sure that all student athletes' voices are heard.
Well, let's go back to the let's go back to the original ruling that we were talking about when I said that the federal judge decided that players, you know, should receive payment if their names or their images or their likenesses, whatever, are used in video games and in TV broadcasts. What do you all feel? How do you feel about that? Because that was a big, big issue. And feel free. We'll go all around the table.
Yeah.
We'll get to all of you.
I think this is kind of it's a step in the right direction, but okay. I think it's just that, a step. It should go further. I think it should definitely be kind of bare minimum. If someone is selling a jersey with a player's name and number on it, mm-hmm. they should get something for that. I don't know whether it be a royalty or what right. have you, but they should get something for that because otherwise that's maybe exploitation might be too harsh. Maybe it's not harsh enough. I don't know how you want to phrase it, but mm-hmm. it is using something that represents the player and all that the player does, and someone else is making a profit on that, and the player doesn't see a cent of it.
Exactly. That's what they're saying.
And so this is a good step, but it's just one point on the path. I think it should definitely go farther to that. If someone someone is selling jerseys that have a player's name and number on it, you can't just scrape off the number or scrape off the name and say here's a school jersey. It's there are a lot of ways to get around this, but it should definitely be something for it. Otherwise, if somebody had my face on a T-shirt, I don't know why they would, but if they did, I wouldn't like knowing the fact that someone was making up money off of your my likeness for whatever reason.
Right.
And I never knew about it, and two, I was never consulted or compensated for this.
Okay.
And it's much more important with athletes because, well, they're almost not necessarily celebrities, but they're much more mm-hmm. in the spotlight. They have much more to gain or lose from this.
Exactly.
I mean, in this world, your name is your brand. And obviously they put work enough to be on the map of that school. You put them on national TV, their brand increases. The truth is, if you're going to say that the school has a right to use your name, that's complicated because you own your name. You made that name. Your mm-hmm. coaches may coach you, but they don't go out and make those SportsCenter top 10 plays that you do. Mm-hmm. So I do believe there needs to be, a sense of compensation. I guess that's why more schools now are starting to go with the nameless jerseys, say that the name on the front matters more than the name on the back.
Right.
I remember I was going to the Florida State game, and I'm looking, and there's a famous Jameis Crabshack shirt. And if you ask me, sure of his incident, his face was on the shirt, and mm-hmm. I feel like he still deserves payment because you're using his face for that shirt.
And you're using that? That's true.
And then another thing I'd like to point out, though, is while this points a step in the right direction, I think, I'm not going to lie, I don't think it's enough because you've got to think about the people that are going to be in these video games and on these advertisements. They're only going to be like, there's not going to be a ton of players, right? And a lot of players are going to get excluded. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like,
mm-hmm.
as I said with the players, they're all practicing the same amount. They're all working hard. Now, some of them may have more, maybe better than others, but I feel mm-hmm. like they'll still deserve payment.
I'd like to make the point that, I'm not trying to dilute the issue, like I said before, but there is a difference between a professional athlete and a collegiate athlete. And I feel like even though they do deserve compensation for sure, there is a certain level of freedom that you give up when you agree to be a collegiate athlete.
Okay.
You have to know that you're giving up some amount of freedom.
The difference between vocational and avocational. Mm-hmm. Like that, I don't know if that's the specific terminology they use in the mm-hmm. NCAA, but I've mm-hmm. heard those mm-hmm. specific terms tossed around. Like the difference between a collegiate level athlete is that it's
avocational.
Whereas a professional in the NFL is a vocational athlete. It kind of does boil down to just a difference between professional and, it kind of just boils down to for cash or for any other reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but go on.
Yeah, on the same token, they do deserve compensation. They mm-hmm. do deserve some livable wage. They do deserve consent when they're being exploited, and they also deserve compensation when they are being exploited. But my question is the same: who would decide how much they get?
Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
how do you decide?
And how do you put a value judgment on the various sports? Mm-hmm. So is basketball more important than swimming? Is swimming more important than golf or archery or fencing? Some schools. Mm-hmm. How do you determine that? But then the other side, and I keep going back to that, mm-hmm. is that some of those high dollar end sports will support those lower that don't have that kind of income.
That's true.
So, I mean, where do you draw the line? How do you draw the line? What are the variables? What are the conditions that you set up that would compensate athletes fairly without, you know, putting unfair judgments on the sport that you're involved in?
I mean, that's a good point. I know personally, like, recently, everybody's talking about the college playoff system and how out-scheduling is a very important.
Yes.
And I like to point out that some people don't realize that the NCAA has multiple divisions. And sometimes Division II schools, when they go to play, like, let's say FAMU goes to play Miami, which has happened. We all know it's an uneven matchup,
but
Miami,
you know,
gets
about?
It's about the money.
Right.
They get paid, and,
get,
you know,
paid.
Division I schools help out lower division schools.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cycle. So they have made that argument, hey, we help out other division schools. You know, we provide the best, you know, stadiums or the athletic centers or training staff that we can possibly afford. I remember the AD of Alabama said Nick Saban is the greatest investment they have ever made by giving him a contract that most NFL coaches do not have. So you do ask, in my personal opinion, I think it should be however all the sports make. The NCAA makes about $1 billion off March Madness.
Kaya, I don't know what it is, but I'm always interrupting you.
It's okay.
But hold your thought.
I will.
Okay. You're tuned into 411 Teen, and this is a lively group. We are talking about should student athletes receive pay. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return momentarily, and I will start out with Kaya. Welcome to the Ephesus Corner. Panelists weigh in on the rights and wrongs of daily life. Today's Ephesus question. You are at a restaurant. You're at the salad bar and getting ready to select your items for your salad. And there's a little kid in front of you. And you notice that as he moves down the salad bar, he takes a bite of each little item and then he puts it back. He sees the carrots, he takes a bite of the carrot and he puts it back. He sees the raisins, he puts his hands in and takes some raisins out and eats them. Some of the raisins kind of drop, you know, back into the container. The cheese, he grabs and gets some cheese. The apples, you get the point.
Yes.
So how do you handle it?
Well,
what do you do?
First, I gotta ask Jesus to give me some guidance.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I know most places you go to, the rule is if you're under a certain age, you must be accompanied by an adult for
yes.
this reason.
But this is a very real situation.
And I know I have seen, I'm not gonna lie, I've been in that situation. I just look, I'm like, am I really seeing this? Because first thing first, I'm probably gonna go find a manager. I'm like, look. I'm going to need you to change, you know, everything. And if because at this point, I'm looking for a refund because it's a little kid. And, you know, you want, hopefully the parents, you would go to, like, excuse me, ma'am, your kid was at the salad bar.
Okay,
you know.
So that's what you would do.
Yeah. And all then right, go to the manager.
You know what?
I would
not go to the parents because already that kid is not well trained. I don't know what the parents are like. You know, I don't want to deal with that backlash. I'm just a private citizen. You know what needs to happen? I'm going to go to the manager and tell him, okay, replace all that. But you need to talk to this boy and his parents and politely either excuse them or strongly recommend that they accompany their son to the salad bar or their, you know, their child to the salad bar. So I wouldn't even get in the drama. I would just let him know that, like Kaya said, either change this or let me have a refund. And please let the parents know that the son is, or the child is acting inappropriately. That's drama you don't ever want to get mixed up. Parents can be very protective of their children.
I would never do that. My mom would give me such a scolding
eye.
Yeah.
Even when they're wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Isaac, it's on you. What would you
do? I don't know how I can follow up on.
I mean, what would you do?
Tough act to follow. Honestly, I think, it, similarly to Julie, I think I would more talk with the manager than anything else because while I'm not necessarily going to blame the manager, you know, I wouldn't ask for a refund necessarily because it's not I wouldn't necessarily ask for a refund because it's not necessarily the business's fault if a random person comes in there and messes with their product.
Yeah, but it's a salad bar. And so he's been through all these different items, and people are going to come behind him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that I wouldn't ask them to kind of replace the contents. But, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily ask, like, hey, I want my money back.
Oh, okay.
Because there's only so much control you have over your customers, and there's also a certain expectation. If you're dining into some place, there's certain etiquettes. It just because it doesn't say like please don't throw your food on the floor. It's kind of it's kind of an implied given.
Yeah. Right.
There's certain rules of courtesy. So when somebody breaks this, like in the case of the kid, and in this case I'm going to assume that it's more a case of he doesn't know better as opposed to actual malice.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I'd at least err on that side of caution.
Let me get to Ewan because we only have a few more seconds left, and I want to hear everyone's opinion.
I would actually talk to the kid. I would say to the kid, "Hey, kiddo," and I would look at him and I would say, "What are you doing there?" And telling him, "I'm trying all the things." I was like, "How would you like it if I walked up to your plate and I ate some of your food and then just put it back?" And he honestly, seeing as I'd be an older individual than him, I know when I was a little kid, I looked up to older kids.
Uh-huh.
And if an older kid had told me that, had I been doing that?
You just stop.
Which I wouldn't have been, because that's gross.
Don't mess with my cuties.
I would have never done that again for the rest of my life.
Okay, let me get the miles.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, and I would give the kid the benefit of the doubt. I feel like it's just more ignorance. He just doesn't know better. I mean, I don't think it's anything to do with his parenting or just anything. I also wouldn't consider it malicious. Like he's just kind of there, and he
he's unsupervised.
Better.
He's up there.
Yeah, he's just having at it.
He doesn't understand.
Would you all? And then we only have 10 seconds. Would you all continue
dynamics.
With your salad bar?
Oh, no.
Oh.
The salad bar's gone.
No, I'd get it.
It's over.
Okay.
They have other things to eat.
All right. Well, that's it. Thank you so much for today's Ephesus question. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. This hour, we are talking about the controversial issue of pay for student athletes. I had to interrupt you, Kaya. So would you continue with your comments?
I will. So we read, when me and Julia and everybody else were researching here, we want to be fully prepared, the IB student in us. we learned that the NCAA and March Madness, which is, a couple weeks of playoff basketball, makes about $1 billion off the advertisement and, all that awesome airtime.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see that
it's like $700,000 for a 30-second ad.
Yes. And so you see they may give it to the programs, but it's found out that the program, the school, normally takes athletic money and turn it into athletics. It doesn't, benefit academics. And I think that when you require so much of these students, some of them don't even go to classes because of March Madness. They miss at least a quarter of their classes. So not only are you asking them to be on this high level and maintain a GPA, you can't maintain a GPA on material that you've never received or received instruction for if you're not in class. So not only are you sacrificing academics for athletics, you're also sacrificing sense of livelihood. And it comes to a point where the NCAA has to be able to set these students for life after sports.
And I think you raise a good point, because for me that goes back to they have very little time with academics. But what about the injuries? Because if we're talking about them being saddled for a lifetime, they can be injured at the college level with something that will continue on, way past college. What do we do about that?
It's like the Kevin Ware incident. I remember everybody knows that horrific picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading an article about Kareem Jabbar, and he said that the NCAA allows an insurance, but up to 90, your expenses have to exceed $90,000. So take, for example, if I was playing and I only needed ankle surgery, which is, not that bad.
Yeah.
It's not like an MCL or ACL tear, which could be preventable. But if my cost of my insurance is exactly $89.99, I'm on the hook for $89.99. So it comes to a point where you also are sacrificing the livelihood of players. And if I'm going to sign up for this program, I want to know that this program is going to take care of me. Hmm. Because truth is, if you get injured, most schools nowadays, your scholarship is year by year. You're cut. That's it. And no more school. What are you going
to
do?
And no college student has the room to pay, what, $80,000, $70,000, let alone they don't have enough money to pay $5,000 for anything. Right.
Can't even buy chicken McNuggets on the dollar menu.
And to expect them to pay anything above $2,000, $3,000 is absolutely ridiculous. As I think we discussed before we came in, that it should be the opposite. If it were under $90,000, it should be covered, and then anything above that, you should have to pay for. But you shouldn't expect a college student to pay extravagant amounts of money for surgery that's going to affect their play on a team. Because in all honesty, at that point, the team and the college's best interests are at stake there. Mm-hmm. And the college should be willing to aid the student doing something that represents the college.
Kind of the problem that I see with the whole program is the fact that if you're in this, if you're on the football team, say, you know, you're on a collegiate level team, there are certain expectations of you, and while it's true that to even be on the team there means you've shown a level of dedication, and it basically means this is something you're going to stick with in all likelihood. If you're on the college football team, you're probably I can't speak for absolutely everyone, but probably going to try and make a career out of this.
But. The reality is, how many do them really make a career out of?
But even still, there's the fact is, if you've got so many kids who, whether or not they'll make it as a professional, who are kind of at least have that goal in mind, they're focusing on that. So if things fall through, and it will for more than a few of them, not everyone's it's just the fact that not everyone's going to make it as a pro. Mm-hmm. But if they don't, and they've been in a program which has basically forced them to just live, breathe, eat, sleep football and nothing but football, when it inevitably happens that that's no longer a viable lifetime career option for them, they're going to be faced with the problem of, well, I spent all my time in this program which kind of set me along this one path. Suddenly, I'm much more limited in my options. I feel like the whole point in going to a university is to open yourself up to plenty of career options. Mm-hmm. And so it seems kind of counterintuitive if you have this program which for all intents and purposes, kind of narrows the focus of what you can do. And if you don't, whether by luck or skill, end up fitting within this small number who are going to be able to carry that on for many, many years into the future, you've kind of missed out. And it's not necessarily your fault that the way the program is worked around is that you're suddenly deprived of the options.
Well, I guess my question, and I'll let you respond, but my question to all of you then is, should, I guess, the top sports offer, and again, I'm talking about basketball, football, do you feel like the top sports should offer better scholarships and better health insurance?
I think it's all around.
I was just thinking about this. Mm-hmm. If schools were to start offering compensation, it would get competitive. Mm-hmm. So it would be like some schools would offer, way more. And people will be attracted to those areas. And the schools that offer just the baseline wouldn't be getting the same amount of talent or, the same people. So I think they should open it up and make it a more competitive market, because not only would they be competing so they could competition would get to the point where it would be fair for the players. Mm-hmm. Like the base price line would be fair for the players. And it would be at above that baseline that it would start getting more and more competitive, and schools would have to eventually catch up to that. And talent would be spread much more, and you wouldn't have to live on such, sad wages, because once you realize that that school is not going to offer you what you need as opposed to another school,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be attracted to go to that school.
And that's a good idea. I guess I'm just thinking, what mm-hmm. about the schools that already have a lot of money in the first place, okay?
That's
so
true.
They can then yep. get all the good athletes mm-hmm. because they've got money.
Yeah.
As opposed to a school
that's
that doesn't,
true.
I mean,
that's
I don't
true.
Know. That's when you were saying that, I was thinking, that's a good idea. But then I started thinking about, yeah. what about those that don't have any money?
Yeah, that's
as,
true.
As I understand yeah. it, one of the main reasons why there's such a limit, and why this part of why this is such an issue in the first place, you know, why we're even having to have this conversation about players receiving pay or not, is because of very real concerns of this potentially turning things into a bidding war between colleges. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's the very real possibility of whatever college has the most money is just going to be able to throw around, is going to be able to attract more athletes. But there's also mm-hmm. a problem of if a school doesn't necessarily have that extra money to throw around, but they yeah. kind of they start to take money away from other programs. Mm-hmm. There's a feeling that just to get a potentially good athlete on their team, they might start to devalue the other programs at their school.
Right.
And the
yeah.
athletics
right.
becomes a little bit bloated because of it.
Right.
I'm not necessarily saying that, again, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that it, you know, take money away from the players or anything, but there are real concerns that make this
true.
An issue of
mm-hmm.
you don't want it to be, because while it is about money, you don't want to make it so much about money
like
that
onion,
everything
you start
else.
Peeling
yeah.
it back and then
yeah.
oh no, that's there too. And
yeah.
I mean, and let me just throw this in our last 3 minutes. What do you think of agents for college athletes?
You do not need an agent.
Well, let's hear mine. Whenever high school seniors are being recruited, like they're being college students are being recruited to go into the pros,
mm-hmm.
it kind of gets to the point where it's like, well, what's the difference there? Mm-hmm. I mean, lo and behold, the college athletes aren't nearly as good as professional athletes, because it is like the top 5% of college athletes in D1 go up to the pros. But still, the competition pool, kind of coming off what you guys said, the competition pool is so competitive that it really looks kind of like the NFL. Or,
mm-hmm. And that's what I'm
mm-hmm.
wondering.
Yeah.
Do you think they should have agents that would really negotiate their scholarship agreement to make sure that every I is dotted and every T is crossed, and that they get health insurance, and that, you know, they get enough so that they have a little bit of spending. I mean, I don't know what would be all of the objectives, you know,
mm-hmm.
but what I'm saying is maybe that would. I understand
why you would want an agent, but if you throw in the price of money, you also throw in another level for these college athletes to be taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
Because truth is, agents work for something. They work for, you know, money. And if you throw in money into that equation with paying them, I feel that there's a level where they can be exploited again from these agents. Now, do I agree they need healthcare? Yes. But I think also when you have agents, they're just going to tell them to go where everybody else is going. Like we said with compiling, when you have that money, it's like you're building that dream team that everybody wished. Like when you have LeBron and you have Kobe and you have D Rose all in one team, and you know that team is going to win all the championships. That's mm-hmm. what's going to happen.
I also like to chime in that if we did have agents, they might not be working in the best interest for students. And also, I feel like the unions can serve the same purpose. I feel like they can also negotiate for better health care, and they can also negotiate for compensation and other things like that. I think that would be more effective, and it would be on a more wide-scale basis, because I would pose the question, who would pay for these agents? But if we do something like the union, you know, where it might be taken out of your paycheck, or, you know, something like that where you would automatically be inducted in and it would cover everyone, I think that would be more effective and more fair.
Yeah, agent is individual based.
I don't know if I see the problem with an agent personally. I feel like if the player really wants someone to negotiate on their behalf and they're willing mm-hmm. to pay the costs of the agent, I think that they should be entitled to do that. If they feel that they need the negotiation expertise of an agent, you know, they can do their research on agents, make sure they're getting a good one.
Mm-hmm.
But
I feel like
they should. Mm-hmm. They have a right to have an agent if they want one.
Because it seems like they need to have someone who is looking out for their best interests. I mean, these are young students. They don't know when they're signing this contract, you know, this scholarship. I don't know. I mean, I'm just
I'm not gonna lie. I wish, I guess, because it's close to home, I really wish somebody would have just sat down with Winston and told him, look, okay. You are expected to be on a higher level than everybody else. I think.
All right. Well, we got to close. We'll come back. I love having you all. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.